You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Connor Newcomb, and on today's episode, we are going to take a look at the upcoming series against the red-hot Oakland Athletics. The A's have won 11 games in a row, and Jason Burke, the host of the Locked On Athletics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, will join us for a crossover episode talking A's and O's here on the pod. So that's all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app, and you can join me every Thursday to talk Orioles and get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. So we're going to get right into it. Crossover episode with Jason Burke, the host of Locked On Athletics. We preview this three-game weekend series at Camden Yards, talk pretty intensely about the pitching matchups that we are thinking are going to happen, although we talked a little bit about Mike Fiers. Looks like he will be back for the A's in the rotation. Talk about this little bit older A's team and who has done well in the lineup, and look a lot deeper at this 11-game winning streak as well for the A's as they come in as the hottest team in baseball. So right now, Orioles-A's crossover with Jason Burke of Locked On Athletics.
We're talking about the Orioles and A's. Connor, how are you doing today, man?
I'm great, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing great. So the Orioles have been a decent team so far. They're not, the worst. And I think that this is that one step in the progression of getting to be a better team. They're not the Pirates or the Rangers right now. Those are the teams that people are looking at as the worst. The Orioles are a decent team. They'll put up a fight. They're not just going to lay down. Where do you see the Orioles in their rebuild right now? How are they looking to you, 15 games into this season?
Yeah, I mean, they're, 7-9 as we speak, winning a game right now. So it could be 8-9, which is, you'll take that from this roster to have 8 wins and 17 chances to start the season. But, they're obviously not in a year right now yet where anyone's expecting them to win any games. Well, they're going to win some games, but win to
a,
few. Right. Win to a number, greater than 70 some. That's kind of the peak for this season, probably, if they could get there. But, I'm thinking for this team, this is a big year for the Orioles because this is the first year where it's not just all just straight up evaluation, like just plugging guys out there and seeing how they do in this situation, evaluating for the future. This is the first year where some decisions, at least by September, have to be made on some of these guys who have been, placeholders for the Orioles, maybe lower ranked prospects who are a little older and have gotten to the big leagues. This is where, some decisions start to be made this year. So again, it's not going to be about winning this year. It's still about evaluation, obviously, but I think it's a little more high pressure evaluation for some guys, for example, like a Rio Ruiz, who's kind of been the starting third baseman for the last couple of years, but he's not really a future piece, but can he be a bench piece for the next couple of years to help the team when they're starting to win again? Or do they get rid of him right as they think they're going to start winning? That's, what kind of stuff goes on this year. So that's kind of what we're looking for. And it's nice when that also turns into, them playing 500 ball and giving some teams some good runs for their money.
And they got rid of Renato Nunez. He's now with the Tigers. That's part of the evaluation process, I would take it as. They've got some interesting guys. They brought in Michael Franco. Is he another one of those guys? Let's see if he's got something. Let's see if we can unlock something. Or was that more of a, let's see if we can get something out of him and turn him into a valuable trade piece? Which way do you think they're going with somebody like Michael Franco?
Yeah, Franco's interesting because, he kind of falls into the category of a guy I just mentioned in Ruiz. Everyone thought Ruiz, although he wasn't spectacular last year by any means, was going to have the third base job for one more year before they started looking elsewhere. Then we're halfway through the spring training, and here's Michael Franco with no job, and now all of a sudden he signed to the Orioles, and you're looking at the roster and you're going, well, Franco has only ever played third base, and Ruiz has only ever played third base, so something's got to give. It turns out their plan all along was to move Ruiz to second, which has worked out okay so far this year. But, Franco's leading the team in RBIs right now. He's hitting, in the 270s, I believe. His defense isn't great. He has already made it cost the Orioles a couple of outs in the game going on as we speak. But he's not horrible. He's league average, sometimes, but the bat has been good. And he's another guy where, you know, I would guess he's probably just a 1 year placeholder, but I could totally see the Orioles at least re-signing him for another year and, you know, potentially continuing to re-sign him until someone pushes him out as a prospect or he plays good enough to trade him and get a prospect back.
Well, one of those things, like the A's do this, and when cards on the table, I used to write about the Astros, and one of the big things that what was good in their rebuild was they had a bunch of just league average guys. They'd have like their stars, but then everybody was just league average in the lineup, and you win a lot of games with just being league average across the board. And having somebody that's league average like Michael Franco, not a bad idea. And that's just something that I always stick with. I'm like, yeah, you got, the A's have their superstars, but if like Jed Lowry's league average, I'm cool. He's playing like an MVP right now, but if Elvis Andrews league average, they're doing just fine. So that's something that I look for in rebuilds and whatnot. So
yeah. And you mentioned kind of veteran infielders, and you just kind of mentioned the two guys, you know, Franco's kind of a veteran infielder brought in, you know, Lowry and Andrus. Obviously Jed Lowry had been with the A's, now he's back, and Andrus in that, I'll say, a weird trade. I don't know if it was good or bad for either team. Just a weird Chris Davis for Elvis Andrus. Everyone was like, that was a move. How have those two worked out in, you know, this is not as much A's like moves, you know, a little bit older players that they're bringing in more so than, you know, like cheaper reclamation projects that they sometimes will, you know, lean towards. These are more like established veteran guys coming back in to Oakland.
When they traded Chris Davis, basically they were trading away his money because the Rangers are now also paying Elvis Andrus' contract for this year. So they had some money to play with. They got Chris Davis's like $17.5 million off the books, and then they don't have to pay Elvis Andrus. So that opened up a lot of money that they did not want to spend. So having somebody else pay for guys helped them rebuild the bullpen a little bit. They got, you know, Rosenthal was like an extra expenditure, but they got Yusmeiro Petit and Sergio Romo. Again, a couple of older veteran guys, but guys in the bullpen, they tend to go a little bit older that have longer track records, less volatility than somebody like Paul Fry, who I'm excited about, you know, not being an Orioles fan, but looking at his stats, I'm like, hey, I think he might be good, but is he good? I don't know. With Romo and Petit, you kind of have an idea of what you're going to get from each of those guys. And Elvis Andrus, if he's league average, I've said this the entire time, if he's league average, that is a win for the A's because you go out and you get a DH. And the day that they traded for Elvis Andrus, I said, Mitch Moreland and Jed Lowry, at like two of like five guys that could be DH candidates for the A's. Jed Lowry is apparently healthy enough to go play his second base every day, which is wonderful. But just if you get a better bat than Chris Davis at DH on the aggregate, the moves make sense a lot. And so that's where I think that the A's were coming from, is they freed up money to go address other needs that they had. And then you can still be a pretty good team on the aggregate, even without Semien and Liam Hendricks and Chris Davis. So I think that's kind of what they were going for. And, you know, as an A's fan and a team, a fan of a team that wants to see them contend, and they still have Chapman and Olsen, Ramon Laureano, Mark Canna's very underrated and very good. You want to see them go after it, and they weren't doing that until February, and it looks like they're at least kind of trying to do what they can within the financial constraints that they've put upon themselves.
Right, and sometimes those financial constraints lead to, you know, waiver wires, trying to kind of, you know, find talent where others, you know, have kind of cast guys off. And it did seem like more so of a veteran offseason. You know, Mitch Moreland was another guy, you know, just kind of looking, you know, across this roster, even in the bullpen. You know, you mentioned Petit and Diekman and Romo and Adam Kolarik, and, you know, these guys who are definitely older and into their 30s. Does the team, you know, when you watch them, you know, obviously compared to, say, a team like the Mariners in their division, who has gone very, very young, and it's working out so far this season, it's kind of a odd question, but do they look like an older team when they play, as far as just being a more veteran type team? Or, you know, where does that fall in because of, you know, all the older guys they've kind of brought in to fill some holes this season?
They're not super like big on bat flipping, but they're not like opposed to it. So that's what I think of when I think of younger teams, is bat flips. And the A's have never, these aren't the guys that do that, but I don't think that they're opposed to showing a lot of fire on the field whatsoever. You know, Mark Canna has shirts that say bat flipping season because he said that once, and it was really funny. But they are they're not like a station to station team. They're not like nine Albert Pujols is in the lineup right now. They are actually stealing more bases now than I think that I've ever seen them do outside of like Ricky Henderson. But you got Ramon Laureano stealing today. They've stolen three or four bases already in like four innings against the Twins. Elvis Andrus has been teaching guys how to steal bases, and he's stunk with the bat, but he's been teaching guys how to steal bases, and that could be a huge benefit of having him on the roster, because you can't point to anything else being the reason why they're stealing more bases except for Elvis Andrus, because he's the only different thing that is, you know, on in this roster right now. And I think that that is something that I like it. So I know that doesn't necessarily answer the question, but they're stealing more bases, and I think that that is a young person thing, not an older person thing.
Yeah, it wasn't a great question. I just had kind of noticed that the guys they were, you know, because I know the A's sometimes will kind of find some gems on the waiver wire. And I felt like more so this year, it wasn't so much guys on waivers as much as just older guys on one-year deals who are still productive, obviously. You know, I still trust Mitch Moreland. I know he got a walk-off hit the other day. You know, I obviously, you know, kind of had forgotten about Jed Lowrie because the Mets couldn't get him on the field, but, you know, he's back in there as well. But I know we both kind of wanted to talk about the starting pitching matchups for the weekend. And I know neither team has officially named those starters, but we pretty much, with the how the rotation shakes out, kind of know who's going to pitch. So I know to start on Friday, the Orioles are going to send Jorge Lopez out there.
That's the Friday starter? I had him as Saturday. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so he will go out there Friday for the Orioles. He pitched last Friday in Texas. And so for Lopez, you know, he has been, you know, before his last start, he was the active ERA leader, as in he has the highest ERA of any active starting pitcher in baseball right now. But he is coming off a start in which he looked really good against the Rangers. He had a perfect game through 3 2/3, 8 strikeouts through 4 hitless innings. Then he gave up 2 solo home runs to the Rangers. Then he got out of the fifth, and Brandon Hyde kind of said, you know, we have the lead. Jorge gave up a couple homers. Let's take him out. Even though his pitch count was right around 70, he could have gone deeper. He is a, you know, 95 mile per hour two seam guy who's going to get a little bit of swings and misses with that and a changeup and a curveball. But he's kind of looking for those ground balls a lot. And, you know, he's kind of an interesting start to this series because, you know, he can be good like we saw against Texas. But when he gets hit, again, among active starting pitchers in Major League Baseball, he has the highest ERA. It's in the upper sixes. So when things snowball, they snowball big time. And I know if guys like Matt Olson and Matt Chapman can get to him early, the A's are probably in good hands on Friday. But who does it look like they're going to send out there to oppose him?
The A's are going to be sending out Cole Irvin, friend of the Locked On A's podcast, Cole Irvin. His stat line doesn't look great, but in his first start, he got hurt a little bit by leaving runners on in the bullpen. Let those runners score. Same thing in his second start, but he's looked better than the stat line. It's just been, you know, a hit here that, or a hit there. He went 6 innings on Saturday against the Tigers, 6 shutout innings. And it looks like he's a very cerebral pitcher. He's going to attack guys according to where they place their hands and where he thinks he can get guys out. He's thinking about how to get guys out throughout the entire week. And I'm sure that he's already been given, you know, your roster a nice once over at the very least. So I like him a lot. And I think that he's set up. He puts in the work each and every day. He's been relying a lot more on his sinker this year, which is why I got him on the podcast. Cause I was like, he did one outing in spring training. I was like, this might be nothing, but it looks like he's throwing a sinker more. Maybe he's going for more ground balls and less swings and misses. And he's like, hey, how about I set the record straight on the podcast? And I was like, okay, sure. And then he didn't deny that. And then that is what has been happening this season. So I was totally onto it. And it sounded like he wanted to call me up, but apparently I was right. So that was a lot of fun. So he's throwing a sinker a whole lot more, and it's been very effective for him. He's been a very, very solid pitcher for the A's right now. Also, I was watching some of the Orioles and Rangers game from last weekend. Every game was fairly low scoring. You guys gave up 4 runs in 3 games. What the hell? That is not what I think of when I think of Orioles baseball, partially because of Oriole Park, but you know.
Yeah, and it was disappointing to not come away with a sweep besides when doing that, because of course the Orioles did lose the third game 1-0 in 10 innings. And they kind of wasted in the third game a start from the guy who's going Saturday. And that is, you know, he has been the Orioles ace for the last 2 years, but we are creeping into John Means maybe be considered an actual ace and not just the best pitcher on the Orioles status right now. So we'll get back to our A's and Orioles crossover with Jason Burke in just a second, but first got to tell you about Built Bar, and that is the improved Built Bar, which is even deliciouser. It's got six new flavors. They are caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp, all going together with those delicious 12 OG flavors like toffee almond, mint brownie, German chocolate, and others. But the best part about Built Bar, it's good for you as well. Great for a health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Built Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, and high in fiber. Just take a look at the Cherry Barcia Bar. 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. So if you want to get your hands on some of these delicious and nutritious protein bars, go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So Means will go Saturday. He threw 7 innings scoreless against the Rangers on Sunday. I mean, ho-hum, that's what he's done all season. You know, 7 innings scoreless, 1 hit on opening day against the Red Sox, and he's just, you know, built off that since then. His bad start this year so far was 5 innings, 3 runs, in which he gave up 3 runs in the first inning and a third in a start and, you know, ran up the pitch count and then just locked in for the next 4 innings. But just because that pitch count got really high in the first 2 innings, he only was able to get through 5. That's his like really bad blemish on the resume so far this year. I mean, Means has been amazing through 4 starts, a 1.52 ERA, 23 Ks, 6 walks in 24 innings. The fastball velocity is up. The changeup is incredible. It's his strikeout pitch. It's got crazy movement. It's got good difference in velocity from his fastball. And the thing that has taken John Means to the next level is he used to be a fastball changeup pitcher who happened to have a breaking ball who he could throw. Now he has a curveball that he can throw for a strike and a slider that he can get a swing and miss on. And he is a totally different pitcher. And, you know, between Lopez actually pitching well, Means pitching well, and Dean Kramer finally figuring out how to throw a strike. That's how the Orioles were able to only give up 4 runs. And the other thing, the Orioles bullpen gave up only 1 of those 4 runs. The only run the Orioles bullpen gave up all weekend was in the bottom of the 10th inning. And of course, that was when a runner had started at second anyway. And so, you know, the Orioles bullpen was locked down the entire weekend. And between that and Means, you know, it's been kind of surprising. We went into the season being like, you know, the O's are going to hit. This pitching might be ugly, but the O's are going to hit. It's been the exact opposite so far.
Yeah, they haven't been swinging the bats too well. And I was going to ask about John Means, what makes him so good. I know that, you know, according to his Fangraphs stuff, it looks like he's, you know, average in Statcast and all that stuff. So it looks like he's very good at changing speeds on guys. I know that his curveball has been very effective. He's thrown like 54 of them. It's like 54 or 56, one of those two. It's right around there. And batters are 0 for 8 against the pitch. So hasn't allowed a hit on that curveball yet. So it looks like he's just good at dropping it in every now and then when he needs, you know, either a ground ball or a strike. And that's kind of cool. But it still looks like he's mostly fastball changeup and changing speeds and keeping guys off balance. Is that what it is?
Yeah, and he's able to throw strikes with both those pitches, the fastball and the changeup. And the changeup's been his out pitch his whole career. And he's just really developed those other pitches more. And he's gone from a guy who throws 91 to a guy who throws 94 with the changeup velocity kind of staying the same, which makes him even more effective with the changeup. It now is the same velocity, but it has more movement and now has more of a difference from his fastball. So, you know, it's gotten better as he's gone along and he's thrown a lot of strikes and he just looks confident out there. And, you know, it's funny because he was the Orioles' only All-Star in 2019. So you would think that was when he broke onto the scene. But he was really the product of a horrendous baseball team and having a good first half. And that's why, you know, they basically looked around and they said, well, it's either going to be Trey Mancini or John Means. And they looked at the other first baseman and slash outfielders on the AL roster and said, we already have way too many of these. Let's just throw an Orioles pitcher in there. And it happened to be John Means because they had to have one representative. But
oh, for sure.
This year has been a difference. He is going to earn an All-Star bid. If he keeps pitching like this, he's going to be on the All-Star team. And a guy, you know, Orioles fans were upset in that 19 All-Star game because he was basically the last pitcher on the roster. He didn't get to pitch.
you know, Alex Cora said after the game, he was the emergency guy in case it went to extras. And, you know, if he gets there this year, like he'll get to pitch as well. And that's kind of what the difference has looked like and what it's meant for him. And now it's, you know, a whole different level for Orioles fans. Cause it's like, is he getting so good? You know, the Orioles have basically said like, and the Orioles fans have said, you know, he's this great, but he's probably not a career two ERA guy. We know that, but he could be the number three starter on the next good Orioles team. And they'd feel really, really good about that. But he's getting so good right now that it's like, if his value is never higher, what would a team be willing to give up right now to get John Means? And I know Mike Elias is taking calls. And so it's also something to watch for this season.
I mean, if he wasn't a lefty, I'd say bring him to Oakland, but that would give him four lefties. And they're not the Mariners at this point who have, I think, five. They were going with five for a minute out of six pitchers, and that was just ridiculous. But getting back to Saturday's start, Chris Bassitt is the scheduled starter for that game. He's, you know, he got the opening day nod. He was extremely good in 2020. Whether or not that was small sample size, we're going to find out. He's only had three starts. He hasn't looked very good. His control has not been there. His mechanics, he said, have been a little bit out of whack. So he's still trying to get into his usual groove. He's got like a 4 or 5 ERA. But the thing with Chris Bassitt has been he'll bend but not break. That's been what he's done the last two starts, is he'll allow guys on. He'll get into sticky situations like second and third, one out or no outs, and then he'll get out of it. So if the Orioles can deliver that big punch, then, you know, obviously it's not going to be a good day for Chris Bassitt. But if he can keep wriggling out of these situations, he's looking, that's how an ace pitches to me. You can get into trouble, but you got to get out of it. And I know that the stats aren't necessarily there. He's not the flashy, you know, Max Scherzer or Clayton Kershaw, anybody like that, Jacob DeGrom. But for what the A's can afford and what they do, he is a very solid pitcher to have on the mound. And I know that his stats are never going to be, you know, quote unquote ace worthy, but he's doing a really good job, I think. And I like giving him kudos for not having it, but still keeping his team in the game. And that's all that you really ask for each and every day. Just don't let us get out of it in the third inning. Let us, you know, have a shot in the ninth. And he's doing that. So I enjoy that. But let's move on to Sunday's game. You got Matt Harvey going, correct?
Yeah, Matt Harvey.
Former A's great, Matt Harvey. I do not believe that he ever pitched in Oakland, but he was in their minor league system for a while. And then nice. They were like, no, thank you.
Yeah. In the year 2021, Matt Harvey is in the big leagues. And I am not here to tell you that Matt Harvey is back to Dark Knight, you know, World Series 2015, Matt Harvey. I am not here to tell you even that Matt Harvey is good, but Matt Harvey is somewhere close to back to league average. He's actually pitching as we speak. He's in the bottom of the fifth inning right now on the mound. The Orioles are leading the Marlins 6-1. And he's kind of throwing like he has all season. You know, he's not going to really get you past five innings. You know, your best day this year for Matt Harvey is probably a 6-inning outing where he gives up, you know, one or two runs. His stuff isn't super crisp. You know, the breaking ball is kind of more slow and loopy than it used to be. It's not, you know, a big snapping breaker that used to get guys to swing and miss. Now, the one good thing that the Orioles have gotten this year for Matt Harvey is on his fastball. It is back to kind of close to what he used to have. He's throwing, you know, 94, 95 with the fastball now, which was not what he had, you know, when he was with Oakland. You talked about when he was in Anaheim, when he was in Kansas City the last couple of years. He has also worked on kind of the tunneling and the release point and the movement, the vertical break on that fastball. So to turn it not into a sinker, but into something more than a straight four seamer, because he was trying to attack major league hitters with a straight up 90 mile an hour four seamer with not a high spin rate in Kansas City. That's why his ERA was like 14. That doesn't play. You either need the high spin rate, you need the vertical break, you know, the kind of sinking two seam action, or you just need 98 in your back pocket. He had none of those things and it wasn't working. So what he worked on, he couldn't get the spin rate. Instead, it was kind of that vertical break, that sinker stuff. And, you know, it has worked to get him some ground balls, you know, get him some double plays, you know, out of some jams he's been in. When you watch him, the eye test says he looks like he's about to blow up at any time. It hasn't happened yet. It could happen Sunday, but it hasn't happened yet. And as long as he's giving the Orioles about five innings, two runs each time, no matter how ugly it looks, they're going to keep trotting him out there.
I love Matt Harvey. I mean, I probably shouldn't because I don't know that he's a great person, but I loved premium Dark Knight Matt Harvey. That was so much fun. As for the A's, we don't necessarily know who they're going to be trotting out there on Sunday. The A's are currently playing a doubleheader right now. Sean Manaea and Jesus Luzardo are both starting today, so it'll be one of those two. I don't know which one. Mike Fiers, I know, is also in the back pocket. He's going to be returning from injury sometime in the next, by the end of the month. And this series happens to fall before the end of the month. So maybe Mike Fiers is also making his season debut in this series. I don't think so, but we'll see. I mean, maybe he could start for Cole Irvin instead. I don't know that it would be that soon, but if he's going to take a spot in the rotation, Mike Fiers would probably be taking Cole Irvin's, and then you figure out if he's going to be in the bullpen or, you know, sent back down to the alternate site. But I'm assuming that it's going to be Sean Manaea. I don't know why. Maybe because he pitched the first game of the doubleheader today. And you don't want to necessarily have Jesus Luzardo pitching at Oriole Park, where home runs are a little bit easier to come by. He can get bogged down by the home run a little bit. And also, Sean Manaea had that game, the wild card game in 2019, where he got beat up a little bit by the Rays, who were the A's next opponent. So those are my considerations for who would start this game. So I think that you got Sean Manaea is my guess. I'm not sure that it's going to be him. He's been looking really good though so far. He is also pitching currently, and we're in the top of the sixth, and he is not allowed to run. He's gotten into a little bit of trouble, but not too much. And he's just been pitching angry, has been his thing this year. He got blown up in his first start, and then he's like, no, I'm going to go pitch with a chip on my shoulder, and it works. I don't know how, but it works. And so good for him. He's one of my favorite people in baseball. He is just full of joy and just such a nice guy. So I always root for Sean Manaea. I do want to ask, though, because I don't remember playing the Orioles in Baltimore this early in a season. Granted, I don't take notes on when these things happen, but does Oriole Park still play like the bandbox that it is this early in the season?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously isn't as much when it's cold, but here in Baltimore today, it was 75 and sunny. And so if it's something close to that over the weekend, it's going to play like that in Baltimore. The ball's going to be flying out of the yard. And, John Means, as good as he's been, he's still a little prone. Something he's so good at is kind of somehow just, when he gives up that home run, it always seems like it's only a solo home run, but he is a little prone to the long ball. That can get him. Okay. Matt Harvey's been prone to the long ball. And when Jorge Lopez blows up, he's definitely prone to the long ball. So it could definitely play a factor this weekend. But, even though it's still going to be April, the ball definitely flies out.
So we will finish up with our Orioles and A's crossover in just a second with Jason Burke, but first, gotta tell you about betonline.ag, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Now, of course, we've got the NBA and the NHL seasons in full swing. They're actually getting closer and closer to the playoffs at this point. And then you've got Major League Baseball, of course, in the first month of the season. Then there's horse racing, tennis majors, golf tournaments, and everything in between. You can bet on it all at betonline.ag. But it's not just sports that they cover. You can also place a wager on award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. They've got real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline.ag has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and best of all, it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that is promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
I did want to kind of finish up with, we've mentioned kind of a lot of guys here, but, after a three-game series of the Orioles watching the A's for the first time since 2019, because these two teams, didn't face off, and then, we will see the A's, I think, a week later, 2 weeks later, they play in Oakland.
The next weekend.
Right. So after these six games, give me one Athletics player who Orioles fans don't know at all right now, and after these six games, you think they will know pretty well.
Do you guys know Sean Murphy?
A little bit. I do, but I think he still hasn't broken onto the scene yet as much where I think he could be.
I'm going to say Sean Murphy. A's catcher, he was a rookie in 2019, so you might not have even seen him in a game then. 2020, he got hurt a little bit, but not too. He's a catcher. He plays like half the time. So but he has lots of power. And I think that he's starting to break through a little bit with the bat as we speak right now. He had a big home run, a game tying home run against Matt Boyd, a guy that's similar to John Means, I think, switching speeds and all that stuff. He shut down the A's pretty good, but the bullpen gave it up late. And he went in with a plan. He was hunting fastballs all day. He finally got one that he drove to deep left center, tied up the game. And I think that he's going to start getting going with the bat here because he's been struggling a little bit. I think that on top of getting going, playing in Oriole Park, especially if the ball is flying, you guys will know who Sean Murphy is by the end of it, the first weekend. I don't know about the second weekend, but the first weekend, I think that Sean Murphy's, if he plays 2 out of 3 games, maybe he has a couple of home runs. That'd be nice. He's going to probably be an all-star as well, I would imagine, because there's not a ton of great catchers in the American League. Salvador Perez is having a great season so far, but off the top of my head, can't think of any others.
Yeah, I mean, I think these two teams and these two fan bases, after not playing since 2019, next 2 weeks, they're going to know a whole lot more about each other.
It's going to be so much fun. I have one question for you, though, and that is Trey Mancini. He missed 2020 recovering from cancer, correct? Pancreatic cancer?
Colon cancer.
Okay. How's he looking now? I know that his stats aren't quite, you know, what you would want them to be, but it's still early and all that. How's he looking? Does he look like he's doing okay? Cause you know, just from a human standpoint, you want to see him do well. I think everybody kind of wants him to be the comeback player of the year. If he puts up, you know, a decent stat line, even over Jed Lowry, who is 37 years old and playing like he's 25. How's looking?
He's looking good. It wasn't a good start, but he was hitting the ball really hard and was getting robbed a lot early in the season. Health-wise, he looks good. You know, he's gotten a couple of days off, and that was expected. Brandon Hyde talked about that in spring training. You know, he's not going to have him by any means play 162 this year. And he's also been playing pretty much exclusively first base or DH. You know, Trey used to play kind of split time between the outfield and first base. A lot of that has to do with how crowded the Orioles outfield already is, but some of it has to do with, you know, just keeping him a little more rested, you know, either first base or DH when he's in there. But, you know, there was the struggles with the strikeouts. He was grounding into a lot of double plays. He was hitting the ball hard, but wasn't getting rewarded. But actually, just in time for this A's series, Jason, he has started to heat up. As we speak, Trey is 5 for his last 6. He did hit a monster 420-plus-foot home run tonight at Marlins Park, which would have literally hit right off the big giant home run statue had it still been there. But of course, it has been removed from the ballpark. But he's heating up. The batting eyes look better tonight so far as we speak. Single home run and walk in the game against the Marlins. Swing is good. You know, he looks healthy. It's not like, you know, he looks like he's lost weight. Like his body looks very similar. And it's obviously just a great story that he's on the field no matter what. But, you know, he was getting really frustrated. He hit a ball last week that looked like it was going to be at the very least a game-tying double in extras and maybe was going to be a walk-off home run against the Mariners last week. Hit a ball to right center field to the warning track. With the juice ball, it's a home run. And guy makes a nice catch. Orioles end up losing the game. He came back into the dugout and legitimately almost ripped his helmet in half. He had his two hands on his helmet and was pulling as hard as he can and running down the tunnel. It looked like he was going to rip it in half. That's how frustrating his start had been with the hard hit balls. They're finally falling in for hits and just in time to play the A's.
Well, that's wonderful. Love that news. Since you asked the question, I'm also intrigued. Give me one player that from the Orioles that's going to make a name for themselves over the next 6 games against the A's.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, there are some definitely unknown hitters for the Orioles, but you know, these guys have kind of struggled and they're coming in waves. Like right now, Trey's starting to hit and Freddie Galvis is starting to hit, but those two guys are veteran guys who fans know. Anthony Santander just got injured in this game. Not sure if he'll even play this weekend, but I actually do want to go to the bullpen. And you know, I'm not sure how much A's fans know about the Orioles setup man and closer, but I'm just going to hand them both out. Tanner Scott, the Orioles setup man, is a left-hander who throws 99 miles an hour with a ridiculous wipeout slider. He's a two-pitch pitcher, but he basically was a, not a big-time prospect, but a top 30 prospect who was always seen as a reliever who just had no command. He was the guy going out there firing 98 and had no idea where it was going. Last year, he finally figured out the command. It's a completely different pitcher. He had an ERA under 2 last year. He's right around 2.5, I think, this year so far through 6 appearances. He gets righties and lefties out. No righty has the ability to lay off his back foot slider. It's ridiculous to watch sometimes. And when he comes with 99 from the left side, it's crazy. And the way it works for the Orioles is you would think, oh, that guy's got to be your closer. You know, he's got Chapman-like stuff. Well, he throws the eighth and then out trots in the ninth inning Cesar Valdez, who throws 90% changeups. These changeups come in at 78 miles an hour. He calls the pitch the dead fish because he just tosses it up in the air and it flops around like a dead fish into the strike zone. Valdez has three saves. He has a 1.13 ERA through eight innings so far this year. He had about a 2 ERA last year with the Orioles as their closer. And it is such a difference from what you see in the eighth and the ninth that you think you're going to hit Valdez all the time and teams just don't. And A's fans are going to come away frustrated the first time they see him because they're going to say, he's throwing at 78 miles an hour every single time. How do you not hit it? It's the dead fish. It's the magic of the dead fish. I think A's fans are going to know Valdez and Scott after the next two weekends.
Is it kind of like a screwball where he doesn't necessarily know where it's going, or is it it's the same sort of movement every time, or, you know, even like a knuckleball?
It's kind of like a knuckleball. It's been interesting to hear opposing hitters talk about it because sometimes it almost works as like, you know, a split changeup where it'll, you know, a righty throws it down and away from a lefty, down and into a righty. Sometimes it works like a curveball where it'll actually go down and away from a righty, down and into a lefty. And it's almost like a knuckleball where you throw it. You don't know exactly what it's going to do every time, but you know it's going to move. That's what it looks like. The velocity is pretty similar every time, but it cuts different ways. It's almost like when Zach Britton was at his height with the Orioles, his sinker was so good sometimes that it almost would sink different ways every time he threw it. Now, Valdez's pitch is 20 miles per hour slower, but it's the same kind of thing where it sinks different ways. And even though the hitters know, like with Britton, he threw a couple sliders in there, but they knew that big sinker was coming every time. Mm-hmm. Valdez throws a couple fastballs in there, maybe when he's 3-0 or he needs it. But they know that changeup, the dead fish, is coming every time. But you don't know where it's going. You don't know where it's going to be. And it's just hard to hit.
I love that. I don't want to see him, but I want to see him pitch. So that'll be a lot of fun. Well, that is it for me. Where can people find you, Connor?
At Locked On Orioles on Twitter, at Connor Newcomb _ on Twitter. Of course, you can listen to the pod wherever you get your podcasts. And Jason, you as well. I'm sure many of the people know where to find you, but let the Orioles listeners know as well.
At Locked On A's, wherever you like podcasts. Also, Locked On A's on Twitter and Instagram. I am at By Jason B on Twitter and in the Locker Room app. And yeah, that's you'll find me at one of those things. So that's it for me. Connor, this was wonderful. Maybe we can do this again before next weekend series too.
Yeah, we'll see how these three games go and then how they match up. Kind of a weird schedule to have Oakland and Baltimore playing in back-to-back weeks, but, you know, here we are.
And then we'll never see each other again.
Right.
So again, our thanks to Jason Burke. He is the host of Locked On Athletics here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And two of us got together for, again, you know, a pretty lengthy crossover episode between the O's and the A's, but wanted to get you a lot of information heading into this weekend series, you know, just knowing also, you know, it gets through the weekend and also, you know, the O's and the A's play again next weekend. So you can kind of use that episode, although it's a little longer than most of our episodes here on the pod. It gets you all the info you need to know for these six games the Orioles will play against the Athletics over the next couple of weeks. Of course, as we mentioned, a team the Orioles haven't played since 2019 because they are in the AL West, did not play them in the COVID shortened season in 2020. But obviously the big thing to know about the Athletics, they have won 11 games in a row, somehow off of two Twins errors in the 10th inning, came back to walk off and win on Wednesday to make that 11 straight games. They are the hottest team in baseball. They started the season 0-6 and then have turned things completely around out there in the AL West. So it should be an interesting matchup at Camden Yards where the Orioles have struggled. When the Orioles have won this season, it's been on the road. They've had their struggles at home, similar to what happened in 2020. So we will see what happens this weekend. Of course, for the Orioles, we'll get to see Jorge Lopez tonight to start out the series, see if he can build off of what was a really, really good four innings last Friday against Texas. But before we let you go, I got to tell you about a project going on here on the Locked On Podcast Network. As this year, the Locked On Podcast Network is partnering with the Draft Network to cover the NFL Draft Live. Get insight and analysis from Locked On local experts and the Draft Network's national experts. Subscribe to Locked On NFL YouTube page to watch live three-day coverage of the NFL Draft from April 29th to May 1st. And the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, is happening right now. featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason Lockenfora, and Brian Baldinger. Our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. But of course, back here on the baseball front, again, it is O's and A's for a three-game series at Camden Yards. Night game Friday, Saturday, day game on Sunday. Hoping the Orioles can be the ones to snap the Athletics' 11-game winning streak coming into Camden Yards, and should be a fun weekend of baseball at the yard with, of course, fans in attendance once again. We will be back with you here on the pod on Monday to talk about the weekend series, give the three big takeaways from the O's and the A's. Then we'll look forward to next week, which is a four-game series at Camden Yards as the struggling Yankees come into town next week. We will talk about that as well. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb. This has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.